The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Two of the players who won't have to wait long to hear their names called. Heisman winner Devontae Smith joins the show on a Tuesday. And projected top 10 pick Trey Lance stops by on Thursday, or as I like to call it, Friday 8. Tune in all week on First Take. Welcome back to First Take, coming to you live above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. It's time to put some respect on the Knickerbocker's name. The Knicks have won 9 straight, Stephen A. Did you know that? Show them some love. The longest winning streak in the NBA.
Stephen A., just show them some love, man.
Julius Randle, right?
So sour.
Why are you hating? Getting the utmost respect from Knicks fans over the weekend, hearing chants of MVP. The Knicks have soared all the way to number 4 in the East, only behind the big three of Brooklyn, Philly, and Milwaukee. Things are certainly different from the team that was the laughing stock of the league for close to 2 decades. Stephen A. Smith. Should KD and Kyrie regret passing on the heritage franchise that is the New York Knicks for the Brooklyn Nets?
Hell yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely they should. Let me tell you something right now. Could you imagine if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were at the Garden instead of the Barclays Center and the New York Knicks were winning? They would own basketball. Okay, not just a borough. They would own the state. They would own the conference. They would own the game, okay? Let me tell y'all something right now. Sean Marks, I am a fan. He has done a great job. I'm a fan of his. I know a lot of folks that are personnel members that work within the Brooklyn Nets organization, class personified. I'm fans of these people. Even though I'm a New York Knicks fan, I'm fans of these people because I'm a native New Yorker, okay? I understand all of that. Brooklyn's in the building. I mean, please, Brooklyn, the borough, I get it. I understand it. But there is nothing in New York like when the New York Knicks are winning. There is nothing in New York like when the New York Knicks are relevant, okay? You look at the streets of New York City, then it's 9-game winning streak. You got folks out there acting like they won the damn championship already, okay? Max Kellerman, you've been on the record dogging people like myself and Spike Lee and calling us the problem because of how hyped and excited we get over every little thing involving the Knicks. But when you see the streets of New York City, excuse me, there's a whole bunch of people that's doing that. This is what New York is all about, okay? So when you talk about KD and Kyrie, we know they got their bag, they got their money. You understand what I'm saying? They ain't starving, won't be starving for generations to come, for crying out loud. Okay, we get all of that. You know, they got the shoe deals and all of this other stuff. No matter what they have, no matter what they achieve in Brooklyn, it would have been nothing compared to if they were doing this with the New York Knicks. Now, I will say this. If Leon Rose and World Wide West, William Wesley, with Scott Perry, all right, the Tom Thibodeaux of the world, if those cats were there, I think that Kyrie and KD would have been at a spot like that, okay? They weren't there, all right? I think if they were there before Kyrie and KD made the decision, they might be in a New York Knicks uniform. But that's neither here nor there. All I'm telling you is that they have to win the championship in Brooklyn for anybody to care. In New York with the Knicks, they wouldn't even have to do that for people to care. People would care from the time they showed up in training camp. That's the difference.
Stephen A. Smith, you and I are both New Yorkers, native New Yorkers.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You just live here.
I'm not a native New Yorker.
You just live here. You just live here. You're a traitor. You're a traitor.
You wrote a column. You wrote a column in Philly. You were local.
Yeah.
I started out doing a show called Max on Boxing and Public Access in New York. We were both local to begin. Yeah. But what happens when you have a lot of success? You can't stay local. You go national. I'm thinking about gangsters. You ever watch those, like, gangster documentaries on TV, Stephen A., right? Yeah. You know the history of
it. That's all in my house.
But I'll tell you what. Like, Al Capone ran Chicago. No one ran a town like Al Capone ran Chicago. Lucky Luciano ran the entire syndicate. He ran the whole country. Who you rather be, Capone or Luciano? Who you rather be, you or me or some local guy?
Yeah, right. Andy Garcia, right. Lawrence Fishburne.
That's right. That's right.
Oh,
underrated.
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Underrated.
Underrated.
Yeah. Yeah,
love that
right.
movie. When you
you're
don't
right.
know. Hey, Max. When you don't know, you don't know.
That's right. Yeah. So that's – the Knicks are local. You're right. They're a bigger deal locally. You know what the Nets do? They lead national coverage consistently. That ain't the Knicks. Now, Stephen A., I am not downing. I'm not taking today to down the Knicks. Like, when you say they should have signed with the Knicks, how are they supposed to know that the Knicks wouldn't mess it all up again or that they'd ever have a nine-game winning streak? Right? Like, Sean Marks has been with the Nets for 5 years making good decisions. The new crew at the Garden has been there about 18 months. And there was no way to know, because Stephen A., you correct me if I'm wrong. I'd like to hear an example of a cat in the history of the NBA like Julius Randle. Pretty high draft pick. Was what he was. Double-double with a mid-range.
Yeah.
Not really built like a defender.
Not ambidextrous.
Couldn't shoot from not
still
ambidextrous.
Still needs to use his right.
When did that dude, after 5, 6, 7 years in the league, ever become an MVP candidate? I don't remember that ever happening. The way it's happened with Julius Randle, there was no way to predict that. He signed for $10 million. I made fun of it at the time. Oh, you finally got someone to take your money? The Lakers let him walk out the door to clear cap space. You know, that was highly unusual. What the Knicks are doing right now is highly unusual, and we don't even know if they're going to sustain it. Meantime, Brooklyn is actually taking over the basketball world, but the playoffs haven't started, so it's not obvious enough yet.
Are you ready for this, Max? This might shock you.
Mm.
I'm going to say it on national television.
Mm.
The New York Knicks have a better culture than the Brooklyn Nets right now. Mm. A better culture.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. You got a guy like Tom Thibodeau, hard-nosed, lives, eats, and breathes basketball, tried, true, and tested. You got, as much as I love Doc Rivers and I revere Doc Rivers, you got some people talking about that 2008 championship with the Boston Celtics doesn't come unless Tom Thibodeau is your defensive coordinator, de facto defensive coordinator, as an assistant coach under Doc Rivers. You've got people who looked at D'Antoni in Phoenix when he was averaging 58 wins a season and said if he had listened to Steve Nash, who was the GM of that squad, and hired Tom Thibodeau as his guy, Mike D'Antoni would still have a lifetime contract in Phoenix because they would have revered the great, great work that he had done if he had brought in somebody that knows defense. You got a guy like Tom Thibodeau, okay, who is known as being hard-nosed, who is known as living, eating, and breathing basketball, who ain't interested in taking days off, okay? And so when you look at it from that perspective, what does that mean to New Yorkers? New Yorkers are seeing a coach and the impact a damn good coach can have in terms of holding you accountable,
oh, I got you
in
now.
Terms of you being, in terms of you doing what you're supposed to do, et cetera, et cetera. You got Julius Randle leading a virtual bunch of no-names, all right, into the playoffs with the longest winning streak in basketball. Meanwhile, in Brooklyn, you got one dude who I consider to be the best on the planet when healthy, but obviously coming back from the injury. You got James Harden coming from Houston. We know the trouble. And now you got the hamstring injury. You got Kyrie Irving. Thank God he ain't taking days off for personal reasons now, because even though the last one was totally legitimate, the first two times, if they were legitimate, he didn't tell anybody. After 9 months off, he came back to play for 3 weeks and then took 2 weeks off and said he just needed a break. And so when you got that
got
kind of
now.
Stuff going on, all right, along with a coach that had never coached on the NBA on any level before, all right, you're going to look at it and say, okay, their greatness as players, as basketball talent, is not to be questioned. But that's not necessarily culture building. That's not necessarily establishing an environment that says, excuse me, this is the way things are supposed to be done and this is how we do it.
All right, I'll go with you. I'll go with you using your logic because I agree with it. You know who needs to build a sustainable culture because you ain't getting any stars? No one's ever going to choose to go there. The San Antonio Spurs. And they did it the best ever. 5 championships in the Tim Duncan
era. That's because they're in San Antonio.
Right.
It's the
Riverwalk. Major markets are hoping for the following, Stephen A. They're hoping to create the kind of culture that you're talking about because you ain't going to win without the stars. I don't care what your culture is.
I agree.
So that KD comes knocking and says, I'm coming here with Kyrie. This is the coach we're going to install and now trade for James Harden. Everything the Knicks are doing, and they are an easy team to root for right now, everything the Knicks are doing is in the hope that one day they create the kind of climate where they can do just what the Nets are already doing to get to where the Nets are right now.
You can say that. You can say that, and everybody wants the superstar talent to win the chip. There's no denying that. I'm certainly not here to deny that. What I'm saying to you, however, is that the New York Knicks right now, based on what we're seeing, do you realize New York Knicks right now are better for basketball than the Brooklyn Nets? Do you really, really want? Think about this.
I don't realize that because it's not true.
No. Well, let me tell you. I'm going to tell you why. You don't care about the regular season.
Right.
You don't care about how the game is compromised in that regard. When cats taking off games when they want to and stuff like that. And no priority whatsoever is placed on regular season games. At least by some. Not everybody within the organization. But at least by some who will remain nameless. The fact is you don't pay attention to that because all that matters to you is the chip. The chip is paramount. I understand it. But it's not all that matters when you talk about the integrity of the game and helping to build the sport and continue to build the sport. I like what I'm seeing from the Knicks. I'm very, very proud of what I'm seeing from the New York Knicks right now. I'm very proud.
Hey, is the chip all that matters for the Nets, Stephen A?
It should be.
That's right. I want to be the team where it's a failure if they don't win the chip because they put together a super squad. The Knicks are hoping to be that team one day.
I agree with that. The New York Knicks got to get superstars. You're absolutely right. But listen, for a team devoid of superstars, a lot of people are a hell of a lot more proud of them. They're looking at the Brooklyn Nets.
Easy to root for.
You better win the damn championship with the kind of season you put us through.
Made a liar out of me, that's for sure.
Loyalty and faith is very cute.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Kamaru Usman, the real deal or what? Second in the pound-for-pound rankings, according to the UFC, only behind John Jones. Knocking out Jorge Masvidal. He said he would do it. He got it done in the rematch. Clearly one of the best in the world. Max, who should he fight next?
Okay. I know, Stephen A., they said they won't fight each other. But I don't want to see Usman fight another welterweight right now. I think that he's beaten all the credible challengers. And Stephen A., you're not wrong. You said it in the last hour. Like, you beat a guy one time in the UFC. It's a very high level. Don't start thinking someone's that much better than everyone else. They could easily lose. I'm not, like, acting like he's invincible. I'm just saying I've seen it already. And as he said, he's starting to lap these guys. He's starting to beat them twice now. I want to see a big event. We're going in. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to win this fight. I'd love to see him fight Adesanya, a catchweight fight, as we say in boxing, right? When you've cleaned out a division and it's like, you know what? You got to look for bigger challenges. It happened throughout the fight. And by the way, Conor McGregor's done that. He was never, even at the height of his powers, he was never worried about protecting some undefeated record, or he was just ready to throw down. I would love to see those two guys go at it. Can Usman beat Adesanya at middle? Or I'll give you another catchweight fight, Stephen A. I know Habib is supposedly retired. At least he's retired for now, and maybe he stays true to his word and he's done. You know, the two best wrestlers in the game, if Habib is back, right? Why doesn't he move up? He dominated lightweight. There was nothing left to prove. Could he move up to welterweight and fight another big, strong wrestler like Usman? I would love to see Usman make a big event. We're going in, you don't know what's going to happen. A catchweight fight rather than beat a welterweight he's already beaten.
You know, before I go into my comments, I want to say this because a lot of people have been coming at me because they've seen me comment about the UFC and stuff like that. I've been a journalist for over 27 years. I do not cover the UFC. I'm just a fan. I said it earlier in the show. I'm going to say it again. Okay? I actually have enjoyed watching the sport over the last few years. And I love the profile that it's growing into. Okay, I think all the folks that cover the sport, and Megan O'Leary and Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier and Anik and these boys, I mean, Ariel Awani and Brett Agamotto. I mean, I'm just trying to do my little part in saying, yo, this is a great, great sport to watch. I don't know the sport like those people, okay? I never pretended to. I even had people writing articles about me, and he's supposed to be an MMA insider. Who the hell said that? That is not true. That is not what I am, okay? So let me just be very, very clear before I give my analogy to let everybody know that when it comes to the UFC and mixed martial arts, period, I'm just a growing fan that wants to show respect to these great fighters that are blessing us with their expertise. That's it. I happen to enjoy it. That's all. Having said that, Max Kellerman, Colby Covington is the name that I'm going to come out with. Now, I know a lot of people don't like some of the stuff that he said, and some of the stuff is dicey, no question about it. I ain't going to get into all of that. What I would tell you is, brother got a mouth on him. He can fight. And that fight against Usman the first go-round where he lost in the fifth round, His boxing game, his striking game, some of the wrestling, that was a tough fight. That's a tough fight, man.
Yep.
This brother can go. Let me be very, very clear about that. And so when we talk about Usman moving up to fight Adesanya, he's built like a brick house, and I get all of that, and he brings a lot to the table, and I'm not saying Usman can't go up and do that. But if you wanted a rematch with Masvidal, right, because you weren't satisfied with what you did to break him the first go-round, and you had to send that message, I'm sorry, if Masvidal warrants a rematch, Colby Covington definitely warranted a rematch.
Yeah, well,
because I saw this brother trading with Usman in the middle of the octagon, uppercuts, lefts, right. I mean, this brother, he's a special talent. And whether you like him or not, let's not disrespect what he brings to the game when he walks into that octagon. The brother can
absolutely
fight.
And they went toe-to-toe the first time. Max, I want you to get in. I just want to mention that's who Dana White said, if you watch the post-fight, that it's going to be Covington
next. That was set before the fight. I mean, we knew that. And I agree with you, Stephen A. He deserves it. But let me ask you something to just show you what I mean. Who you taking, Usman or Covington, rematch?
Usman.
Right, me too. That's my point. It doesn't mean he'll necessarily win. It was a good fight the first time. What I'm saying is there's something about making a mega event where you have to capture the public's imagination
in a way. That would be a mega event, Max.
Yeah, not like an Adesanya fight. And I know they're not going to fight each other. What you're talking about not only is going to happen, but is more realistic. I'm talking about a kind of crossover appeal event. Well, I had Jake Paul on Max on Boxing, Stephen A. Believe it or not, on Max on Boxing this last week. He understands Floyd. Now, he's a novice, right? Now, Floyd Mayweather, one of the greatest fighters of all time. He understands how to make big events. It's not simply taking on your most likely challenger. It's capturing the public's imagination in a certain way that I think a catchweight fight with Usman, I know it's not going to be next. If so, after Covington, would do.
If Masvidal gets the rematch, he should get one too.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Time now for First Take Draft Blitz, a preview of the 2021 NFL Draft. Today we focus on Stephen A's Steelers. Pittsburgh got off to an 11-0 start, but lost four of their last five before getting upset in the playoffs by who? Oh, yeah, the Cleveland Browns. Big Ben is back for what many believe will be his final season. But a big question mark, who lines up behind Ben after the exit of James Conner, who went to the Arizona Cardinals? Stephen A, would you like your Steelers to go running back? Oh, look who's here. Our quarterback, Tim Hasselbeck, back with us. Great to have you, Tim. I'm sorry I was so rude. Stephen A, back to you. Would you like your Steelers to go running back?
Desperately. Desperately. They've had one of the worst running attacks in football the last 3 years. That's not something that's synonymous with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The reality of the situation is we judge Ben Roethlisberger, and obviously we were disappointed in how the season ended because they nosedived the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season, and we get all of that. But I remind everybody that Ben Roethlisberger was coming off of elbow surgery, obviously. This was his season back, his first season back after elbow surgery took him out pretty much the entire previous season. And so for him to come back and have to throw the football so much, you had to do so because you didn't have a running attack to rely upon. They've got receivers. You see a Juju Smith-Schuster. You see a Chase Claypool. You see a James Washington and others. And you know what their passing game brings to the table. They've got enough weapons to throw the football to. But when you talk about ball control, when you talk about taking pressure off the quarterback and all of those things, you got to be able to run the football in order to pull those things off. And that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers have been devoid of. So I think they desperately need a running back. I'm a huge fan of Najee Harris out of Alabama. I think he's an absolute stud. I don't know if he'll be there at number 24, but if he is there at number 24, you desperately need to take him. You've got an elite defense. Offensively, you got a passing attack. I know you got to build your offensive line, and I get all of that. But at number 24, is there going to be a stout offensive lineman that's going to be that much of a difference maker? I don't know that. But I know Najee Harris can be a difference maker, and that's why you take the best player in that position.
Well, they definitely need help on their running game, no question. But Stephen A., what has that got to do with a running back? I mean, you know, apologies to Bill Polian, who forgot more football than I'll ever know, and once told me the back makes the line, but that's not what any of the evidence suggests. The evidence suggests quite the contrary. Casey Joyner, the football scientist, have him on the radio show, Max Kellerman Show, 2 p.m. Eastern, on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And he's brought up the fact that when you look at it, in fact, an average running back behind the top line is going to get 7-8 yards when he, a carry. An excellent running back behind a bad line is going to get 2 or 3 yards. The issue with the Steelers and their running game, Stephen A., no doubt the run game needs work. But early on, they were good because they were doing it with smoke and mirrors. And then eventually the league realized, oh, it's smoke and mirrors. They really can't block for the run. And that went away. You can get a bunch of running backs every year to run behind a real good offensive line and get you good returns. The Steelers need to rebuild the line. Look at what Kansas City just did in this offseason. I'm a Giants fan, Stephen. I've been waiting 10 years for them to rebuild the line. Kansas City just did it in 1 year. Their line, at least on paper, looks devastating. The Steelers need offensive line help, period. Forget the back. You can go find a back. Get the offensive line help.
I think there was a stretch when, Le'Veon Bell was a Steeler and he was running well, that the Steelers probably had the most underrated line in football at the time. They were really good. They were athletic. They were good pass blockers. Did an excellent job sustaining, which is why Le'Veon could run with patience the way that he ran. Look, I'm not a huge fan of drafting running backs in the first round, not because I don't think they can help. They certainly can. They can, in many cases, become nearly half of your offense. But I think that the talent disparity from a first-round running back, to a second or third, or in even some cases an undrafted running back, are not nearly as significant as an offensive tackle that you could find in the first round versus one that you find in the fifth round or the third round or something like that. And so for that reason, I think that going offensive line makes the most sense for Pittsburgh, because they will be a back that probably won't be as good as Najee Harris, but maybe is not that far removed, and behind a better offensive line can end up being a pretty good back, especially in an offense that's got an experienced quarterback that's smart at the line of scrimmage and then has the ability to distribute the football. And you think about so much of what Pittsburgh has done offensively, it's essentially they make you defend the width of the field, 53 and a third, you know, yards wide, by spitting it out to guys and letting them have good run after the catch, because they've done such a good job drafting wide receivers that are good with the ball in their hands.
Okay.
I go O-line all day.
Okay.
I go O-line all day.
By the way, the last time the Steelers took an offensive player was guard David DeCastro. That was back in 2012. On all defense.
They got retirement on the offensive line. They lost guys. They really need to build it.
By the way, Big Ben, 18 years. Unreal. I'm getting old. Tomorrow, the Draft Blitz continues with a preview of two of the top teams in the AFC North. Should the Ravens and Browns get more help for their young quarterbacks? Find out Tuesday right here on First Take. In a major trade between AFC powers, the Ravens sent Pro Bowl offensive tackle Orlando Brown Jr. to the Chiefs on Friday in a deal that landed Baltimore an additional first-round pick plus three other picks in the 2021 in 2022. Max, is Brown a bigger gain for Patrick Mahomes or loss for Lamar Jackson?
Bigger gain for Patrick Mahomes. I know the Ravens were going to have a problem re-signing him or couldn't afford it, whatever. How do you trade him to the Chiefs? Almost anyone other than Kansas City. Let me tell you why Kansas City didn't win the Super Bowl this year. They didn't win the Super Bowl because they didn't have an offensive line at all. So Patrick Mahomes, who I thought was the most spectacular player in the Super Bowl, when I think of plays from that Super Bowl, I'm always going to remember what Mahomes did. He was pressured on over 50% of his snaps, and they almost never blitzed, so everyone was also covered because he had his two tackles missing. Both are some of their best players, right? Fisher and Schwartz, and they had to rebuild the whole thing. So you send them, if you're the Ravens, one of the best left tackles in the business in his prime. And by the way, they'd already signed Tooney, one of the best guards in the business in his prime. And then they have guys who aren't in their primes anymore but are still good offensive linemen. Tim, like, I can't believe what's going on. I just brought it up. I'm a Giants fan. They have been awful on the offensive line for 10 years. And every year they say they're going to rebuild it, and they never figure it out. And Kansas City looks like they just did it in one year. Like, by the middle of the season, at least on paper, it looks like this might be the best offensive line in the game or among them. 1 year, and on the left side, on the quarterback's blind side, a tackle and guard. Oh, my God. You can't do better than that. I'm just saying. Get the best deal. They got good draft compensation. I get it. But if you're the Ravens, not to Kansas City, for the love of God. What are you doing? Mahomes is now going to be protected, health willing. Good luck stopping him.
Well, I think when you look at the Ravens, I'm looking at it from this perspective. They've got a multitude of needs, particularly needing a pass rusher, a wide receiver, and some other additional weapons. They've got the number one rushing attack in football with the most electrifying runner from the quarterback position maybe the game has ever seen in Lamar Jackson, who religiously rushes for over 1,000 yards per season. At least he's done so for the last 2 years. So we've got to pay attention to that. And the fact that he's so elusive, and it obviously buffers their running game significantly. I think that goes a long way, Max Kellerman. And then again, you got to remember, even though they had the worst passing attack in football, you could point to his accuracy or lack thereof, but it's certainly not because of pressure. He was only sacked 29 times last year. He played 15 games. He was sacked less than 2 times per game. We've got to pay attention to that, along with the effectiveness with running. They may have felt they could afford to compromise the offensive line just a touch to get additional weapons. You got a first, you got a third, you got a fourth round pick in this year's draft, a later round pick in the 2022 NFL draft. You got to pay attention to all of those things along with their multitude of needs. And if there's one place they felt they could sacrifice, it's with that. That's why they did it. And that's why I think that I'm not going to knock them for it, because they know what they have in Lamar Jackson. They know his strengths. They obviously know his weaknesses. And they know the weaknesses that exist in other parts of their roster.
And so they, if you can get multiple picks to address that, and you have to sacrifice it from the standpoint of your offensive line when you don't think that's going to sacrifice your running game, particularly with Lamar Jackson running the football out of the quarterback position, then that's a chance that you're willing to take. I can't sneeze at that.
Yeah, I think the Ravens, I don't think it really affects them all that much. Look, he was an unhappy player, and truth be told, with the way that the tackle position works with their quarterback run game, it really makes the tackle's jobs much easier because it gives them great angles in the run game. I think this is huge for Kansas City, and really what it makes me think about is the plan that the leadership in Kansas City have. We all know Andy Reid's a great coach, but I think about, you know, them letting Dee Ford, you know, walk, but they replace him with Frank Clark, with them having a plan with Patrick Mahomes. These guys aren't just making decisions, you know, minute by minute. I think they truly, truly have a plan. So when they let both tackles, essentially, you know, they moved on from both of them after the season, after what we saw in the Super Bowl, they clearly had a plan, and now we're seeing it. And so, look, I think it's kind of the brilliance of Kansas City with how they've continued to, you know, build their roster even when they've had good players move on. And I really think it's a non-issue for the Ravens. And Max, I would just say to you, you know, Chris Snee and Sean O'Hara and David Deal, those guys are now just walking through the door, man. Sorry about that.
But you know what? You're right. They're not walking through the door, Tim. That's exactly right. You got to go get them. I look at, you know, you could talk about the importance of the offensive line. Who wants to bring it and actually walk the walk? The Cowboys, once upon a time, you know, because their last dynasty was built on the best line in football. So they spent four out of their five first-round picks, four times first-rounder went to the O-line. That's why Romo and then Dak were so well protected. That's why the offense worked so well, because they really brought it. They put their money where their mouth was. I hear the Giants talking a lot about that, different teams. I said, Stephen A., the Steelers got to do it. Look what Kansas City did. You basically let go of Schwartz and Fisher because they're older, they're injury prone. They made an $80 million total offer, and they landed Tooney. They spent I don't remember what the guarantee was, but it's an enormous deal for a guard, right? But they brought in one of the best in the business. And then they just made a trade and gave up a lot of draft capital, a first, a third, a fourth, to bring in an elite left tackle. That's a team that's walking the walk. You're right, Tim. They ain't just walking in through the door. You got to go get them, and the Chiefs got them.
Mm-hmm. Well, they evidently are sending a message. We think we lost the Super Bowl because we didn't protect Patrick Mahomes. That may very well be the case. We will find out, because they did get slaughtered in the Super Bowl, held to 9 points. That's not something we ever expected to see from a team quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and before we say bye to Tim, in case anybody's just joining us now in the first hour, Tim said that he thinks Justin Fields is the second best quarterback in this draft behind only Trevor Lawrence. So we'll just put that back out there on Front Street. I know Stephen A. co-signs. Tim, good times as always. We will talk to you soon, sir. You have a wonderful lunch. I hope it's something good. All right, to baseball. The Padres and Dodgers might be the hottest rivalry in baseball right now. On Saturday, Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a home run off of Trevor Bauer and was seen celebrating at Bauer's expense as he rounded the bases. After the game, Bauer had this to say.
I like it. I think that pitchers who have that done to them and react by throwing at people, or, you know, getting upset and hitting people or whatever, I think it's pretty soft. If you give up a homer, a guy should celebrate it. You know, it's hard to hit in the big leagues. So I'm all for it. And I think it's important that, you know, the game moves in that direction and we stop throwing at people because they celebrated having some success on the field.
Sounds like he's planning on beating him next time, is what it sounds like to me.
He sounds real excited about it. Yeah, check out the body language. By the way, for a little more perspective on it, it was also Bauer had said that sometimes when he pitches, he closes one eye, and then that's what Tatis was doing. He was also closing one eye, so there's a little more to the story. Stephen A., what does this mean for baseball?
I think it's the best thing to happen to baseball in years. I truly, truly do. And I literally stood up and applauded Bauer for saying what he said, because baseball has damaged itself by holding on to tradition so religiously. They don't realize how far they've come in terms of coming across as being completely detached to their viewing audience and society as a whole. It ain't about you and what you want and your way of doing things anymore. You know, it's not about policing yourself and policing the game for yourself. No. Some intervention needs to take place from time to time. And when I think about Bauer, this is a guy that talks a lot of smack, and he walks off the mound, and, you know, he's got his little swag with him. And you go up against the Padres, who have been giving it to the Los Angeles Dodgers this year. I think they've won like 6 out of the 7 meetings they've had against one another. Came back from a 7-1 deficit yesterday in the 6th or 7th inning. Dustin May pitched his tail off for the Dodgers, but obviously your relief, your rotation, you know, your staff out of the bullpen couldn't hold it down. David Price had a hamstring injury. Max, after giving up about 3 hits and 2 runs and stuff like that, they had to yank him out of there, and everything fell apart. Tatis is a big-time baller, earned his million. A matter of fact, it's bringing attention to Lindor with the New York Mets because Tatis is earning his money. Lindor, Tatis, what the hell are you doing? The 2021 Major League Baseball season has started, Lindor. Where the hell are you, okay?
Well, I'm rooting for Lindor's him,
not against the Yankees, not against
spending
the Yankees, but I'm rooting for him. But you got to show up. You can't demand, Max. Remember, he got offered $325 and held out for $341, $1 million more than Tatis, okay? Well, play like Tatis then, okay? I'm just saying that to Lindor. Back to the Padres. Padres are balling. They got a lot of talent. Picked up Darvish and Snell in the offseason. I like what they're doing. I appreciate the rivalry. It's great. But back to Bauer, the fact that you said after Tatis smacks the home run off of you, walks, and he's strutting and he's talking, you're like, it's good for the game. No more, oh, we're going to retaliate by hitting you with a pitch because we didn't like how you acted or anything like that. I love that. I love the fact that I saw Kershaw going at one of the Padres the other day, Max, and telling them that was BS, that he just did like a check swing to get a little hit. Like, I'm coming at you. Come at me. That's competition. It's what we want. It's what we live for when we watch sports. We want to see two people playing the sport within the realms of competition and decorum and decency going at each other with fervor, trying to take you out. Not cheating, not being Bush League. It's me against you. Let's get it on. And I love the fact that Kershaw did that. I love the fact that Bauer did it. I love the fact that the Padres have embraced it. And I'm telling you right now, when the Padres and the Dodgers, the best thing that could happen for baseball is for those two teams to meet in the postseason. It'll be special. Dodgers took them out last year. It'll be special if they met each other again this year. It's great for baseball that they're ingratiating themselves with the times because their old way of doing things don't work for that viewing audience in today's day and age. And they need to do a better job as individual athletes of better promoting their sport before it dies right before their very eyes. I love the fact that Bauer said that. And this is going on in baseball right now. I love it.
This is a debate show, but I don't know if we can debate this, although I will debate one thing before I get to my point, Stephen A. Tatis and Lindor are different kind of players. Lindor reminds me of when the Mets signed Carlos Beltran. He has a wide base of skills. He does a lot of things, you know, better than most, but no one thing that jumps out at you like, oh my God, that's the best I've seen. He's an above-average fielder, base stealer, power hitter, all those things. Tatis is a special kind of offensive talent that's
but
different.
I'm not getting specific. I'm just saying earn your money. In I other words, you got 341.
Overtime, Lindor
play
should.
Like it.
Yeah,
play
overtime,
like it.
Overtime, Lindor should,
that's
but he's not
I'm
the
saying.
Type of player that's going to wow you the way Tatis is.
I'm not getting specific.
It's more. All right, look, I'll say this. Let me say this. We often lament the fact that baseball has its unwritten rules and its way of doing things. And Stephen A., really what we're talking about is a culture that comes from more of a monolithic culture, a one way of doing things back in the day. Reed, white. I mean, there was a color barrier in baseball. And I want to say something about that because there are lots of things that this country should be grateful about in terms of the puritanical culture, right? Because that's the kind of puritanical work ethic. It's not that other cultures don't also work hard or have good work ethics, but that is really stressed in the kind of puritanic that founded this country, basically, you know, landed on Plymouth Rock. The point is that it comes with frugality and modesty, right? It's not just that you work hard, you put your head down and work, lots of cultures, but also be modest and be humble and kind of self-contained. And that's not everybody's background. And what we see as as sports have gotten and the mainstream coverage of them has gotten more diverse, it's like, wait a minute, just because it started out in one kind of culture doesn't mean it has to be there forever. Stephen A., I notice as a boxing fan and a baseball fan, those sports becoming increasingly marginalized, not exclusively because there are other issues too, but partly because they lack showmanship that some other competing sports have. Basketball and football have better showmanship. When I look at boxing and just even entertainment like the WWE or the UFC, right, another sport like the UFC, I see a level of showmanship and a difference in terms of culture that benefits those sports. And I think baseball is aware now that we have a certain way of doing things over here. Yeah, but not every culture that plays baseball does. And the more baseball embraces that, the diversity and the different way of doing things, the better off it'll be.
Yeah, amen. Amen. They need to get, they need to show up with the times. I mean, damn, the NBA and the NFL are arguably more popular, even though the NBA has been struggling as of late. The bottom line is that in terms of ingratiating itself with that younger viewing audience, the NBA and the NFL have done an exceptional job of doing so. Major League Baseball hasn't done it purely because of its arrogance and its stubbornness as a sport. And these athletes need to do a better job, as Alex Rodriguez and others have pointed out, promoting their own damn sport and acting like you care about what the viewing audience wants to see. How about that?
Facts. All right, let's go back to the NBA now, guys. Last night, Russell Westbrook and the Wizards beat the Cavs to win their eighth straight game, and they are currently in a playing spot for the postseason. It was just a few weeks ago when Stephen A. had this to say about the former league MVP.
He's a former league MVP. He's the most athletic point guard we have ever seen in NBA history. Bradley Beal and you are in the backcourt together, and y'all are 17-28 in the Eastern Conference. I mean, damn. You've played with some great, great players over the years, some talent, and not a single title to show for it. The numbers are the numbers. That's Russell Westbrook. He can do that to anybody. But I'm at a point in time in his career where it's like, it ain't about that no more. It's about whether or not you can get to another level to win the chip.
Regret seems to be a theme of the show. We talked earlier in the show about if Kyrie and KD should regret not going to the Knicks, who are in fourth place. Stephen A., my dear friend, do you regret your comments about Russ?
Hell no. I meant every word about it. I didn't stutter. And I mean it now. Props to Russell Westbrook. He deserves it today. A matter of fact, I think he and Mrs. Westbrook and the Washington Wizards should be thanking me personally. After I said what I said following a 35-21-14 performance from Russell Westbrook, the Washington Wizards proceeded to lose four straight games. Since that time, they've won eight straight and 10 of their last 11. And now they're in the picture for the Eastern Conference playoff picture. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about triple-doubles and you lose it. And you 13 games out of 500 with a brother like Bradley Beal averaging 31 a night, who is a star, by the way. Now, I know there are people out there that are critical of him and say he could do more in fourth quarters. I don't want to hear that. Bradley Beal is a sensational basketball player, okay? With him and Russell Westbrook together, how they're playing now is how they should have been playing. Those are the kind of results that I'm talking about. This is Russell Westbrook. You understand what he's talking about? And I hope he's watching. I really, really do. Because I'm going to say it one more time. He's Russell freaking Westbrook. He is box office. He is the most athletic point guard we've ever seen in NBA history. He is a future Hall of Famer. He is a former league MVP. He is all of that in a bag of chips, okay? Despite the fact that he's only shooting 31% from three-point range. That's how lethal this brother is, averaging 21-13-11 in the month of April. This is Russell Westbrook. I don't want to see Russell Westbrook 13 games under 500 or for some has-been team that's just lucky to be in the damn league or sticking up the joint, but you got triple-doubles. He can do triple-doubles in his sleep. He's averaging a triple-double now for the entire season. Okay? He's about to eclipse Oscar Robertson for the number of games. He said, this man is phenomenal. That's what you want to do? Losing? No. His talent is too great to accept watching him
on some team that's struggling to be 10 games under 500. No. I said what I said, and I meant what I meant, because he's too great to be associated with such mediocrity. And now that they're playing and they don't look mediocre, I'm fine. Because he's doing now, and they are doing now, what I expect with a team with a backcourt like Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook together in it. I ain't apologizing. Damn right I meant it.
That part is fair, Stephen A. Here's the problem. Tell those stats again. That was the end of March. Say those stats again. What did he do coming off that game?
35, 21, and 14.
35, 21, and 14. If Russell Westbrook could shoot, you said 31 from three. I think that's up from where it was. If Russell Westbrook could really shoot 37, 38% from three, he'd be in the conversation for the greatest player ever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's not perfect. Who's perfect? Here's the problem with what you're saying, though. Part of it's fair. I mentioned that. But it's not like Russell Westbrook is now willing the team to win, and he wasn't trying to will the team to win then. Sometimes this stuff just takes time. New team, new teammates, you got to figure it out. You can't be responsible for the way everyone else is playing. Westbrook plays his hardest. He tries to win his hardest all the time. That's one thing I can't criticize him about. I might say, Russ, I've seen in playoff games, you want it almost too much. Like, he could see the team needs something, so if anything, he pulls too hard. And I think that can be counterproductive, right? Yeah, I agree with you. He could shoot it better. But Stephen A., this man's will to win, I can't question that, and I can't blame him when the team's not winning early on.
Can I chime in, Max, respectfully, because we're running out of time? I got to say this because of what you just said. First of all, I did not insult him, but let's point to certain things. I pointed out that his teammate was Kevin Durant, James Harden, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Victor Oladipo, Paul George, James Harden again, and Bradley Beal without a title to show for it. Those are facts, number one. Number two, nobody's ever questioned his effort or his tenacity. But Max, unlike other stars who insisted, if I'm not going to be where I'm at, to go someplace else, this brother didn't mind going to the Wizards. What the hell you want to go with the Wizards for? They ain't got a chance to be in the championship picture. And as great as you are, that's not going to get them there. And last but not least, Max Kellerman, you've been in the league for over a decade. Your jump shot has not improved. If anything, it's regressed when you're going up against snipers. So all of those things I take into consideration, because I'm looking at him and I'm saying, well, listen, I know what you can do numbers-wise. Nobody can stop Russell Westbrook.
I'd like to respond real quick, Stephen A.
He's so great whenever he's on the court. I think he should be in a position to compete for a championship. And the situation he's in may be because of him.
Stephen A., I want to respond just real quick, and you can have last word.
Sure.
Number one, when he's okay going to a team that doesn't look like it's a champion, to me that's okay because Westbrook's still going to play as hard as he can and compete night in and night out.
I know that.
And that there's something actually very competitive about that for me. And the second thing is, I don't think his lack of jump shot is from lack of effort or practice. Some guys just don't have the same touch from the outside as other guys.
Well, you could say that, but Max, he is a strong-willed individual, and I say that respectfully. He believes in his way. And my point is, you've had competition that has shown you there's a better way.
Mm-hmm.
First day back in studio was a success. Stephen A., since you're out in L.A., Max and I just wanted to let you know we've been walking around the streets of New York and stuff. It's actually the New York Knicks are a bigger story out here in New York than the Nets. I just want you to know. They won nine straight. Julius Randle, he was not
good.
A bust.
Very good.
He's the real deal. Yeah. So just wanted to catch you up to speed
Brooklyn
on what's happening out here.
Brooklyn, what?
Brooklyn, where you at?
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.